Vacha, Sukhaya, Brahmani, Karoti, Loko, Na, Kais, Sukham, Manyad, Paramam, Va, Vindeta, Bhuyas, Sata, Eva, Dukham, Yaratra, Yuktam, Bhagavan, Vadin, Na, Uvacha, Sukhaya Karmani Karoti Loko, Natai Sukham Vanyaru Paramamba, Vindeta Bhuyas Tata Eva Dukham, Yaratra Yuktam Bhagavan Vadena, Vidura Uvacha, Sukhaya Karmani Karoti Loko, Natai Sukham Vanyaru Paramamba, Vindeta Bhuyas Tata Eva Dukham, Yaratra Yuktam Bhagavan Vadena, Vidura Uvacha, Sukhaya Karmani Karoti Loko, Tathai Sukham Vanyaru Paramamba, Vindeta Bhuyas Tata Eva Dukham, Yaratra Yuktam Bhagavan Varinna, Vidura Uvacha, Vidura said, Sukhaya, for obtaining happiness, Karmani, fruitive activities, Karoti, everyone does so. Loka, in this world. Na, never. Tai, by those activities. Sukham, any happiness. Va, or. Anyata, differently. Uparamam, satiation. Va, either. Vindeta, achieves. Bhuhya, on the contrary. Tata, by such activities. Eva, certainly. Dukham, miseries. Yat, that which. Atra, under the circumstances. Yuktam, right course. Bhagavan, O great one. Vadet, may kindly enlighten. Na, us. Translation. Vidura said, O great sage, everyone in this world engages in fruitive activities to obtain happiness. But one finds neither satiation nor the mitigation of distress. On the contrary, one is only aggravated by such activities. Please, therefore, give us directions on how one should live for real happiness. Purport. Vidura asked Maitreya some common questions, which was not originally his intention. Uddhava asked Vidura to approach Maitreya, Muni, and inquire into all the truths concerning the Lord, his name, fame, quality, form, pastimes, entourage, etc. And thus when Vidura approached Maitreya, he should have asked only about the Lord. But out of natural humility, he did not immediately ask about the Lord, but inquired into a subject which would be of great importance to the common man. A common man cannot understand the Lord. He must first know the real position of his life under the influence of the illusory energy. In illusion, one thinks that he can be happy only by fruitive activities. But what actually happens is that one becomes more and more entangled in that network of action and reaction, and does not find any solution to the problem of life. There is a nice song in this connection. Quote, "Because of a great desire to have all happiness in life, I built this house. But unfortunately, the whole scheme has turned to ashes, because the house was unexpectedly set on fire." End quote. The law of nature is like that. Everyone tries to become happy by planning in the material world. But the law of nature is so cruel that it sets fire to one's schemes. The fruitive worker is not happy in his schemes, nor is there any satiation in his continuous hankering for happiness. So here, we see is that Maitreya is not Vidura's approach. To discuss about the Lord, but he has asked common questions. Common meaning that it's about the world and how the world functions. So that's common. That's what all, how do you say, educated persons know. But here the real discussion is about the Lord himself. That's the real topic. So it's pointed out that out of humility he's discussing this, so he's not presenting himself on a more elevated platform. And we have the aspect that it's good for others. Other persons will benefit by this kind of discussion. So here it is. This is a very interesting overlap here. Is that striving for happiness through fruit of activities, the living entity is trying to be happy. So then from this we can understand striving for happiness through fruit of activities is not important, it's useless. But it mentions then how one should live for real happiness. But now in here, the word life is still used. It's very important. Right? Prunes exist. People are alive. Okay? That's important. Life is dynamic. It's not existence. The soul exists. But life is dynamic. So that means then we have a seeming contradiction here. How do you live? But at the same time, is the life as we know it will not give us what we're looking for. The living entity is trying to be happy, and that's not a problem. Right? There are certain things that actually aren't a problem. Being happy is not a problem. Right? It may be a popular concept these days that being miserable is actual Krishna consciousness. But according to this here, that's not. He's saying how to live for real happiness. Of course, living for a higher happiness means giving up a lower happiness, but it doesn't mean that there's no happiness. Right? This is a balance that must be achieved. So, that would mean that life goes on, but the motive, that would adjust, that would change. The motive for one's endeavor, that would adjust. It didn't say the activity adjusted. That's important. Because generally, naturally, the ritual is seen as the importance. But we always must remember the ritual is to carry something behind it. a mood is there, a desire is there, an expression is there. So there's a ritual, right? Just like you meet somebody, is the folding of hands the important element? Or is the sincerity of greeting another Vaishnava and hoping, well, you know, being their well-wisher, is that the real purpose of the folded hands? Does that make sense? So ritual is important, because otherwise how do you express it? Right? So the point here being made is that the ritual does not have to change. What changes is the motive behind your ritual. Am I folding my hands and then approaching someone because then from doing this I'll make a connection and then I'll get all kinds of facilities? Right? So the folding the hands isn't the problem here. It's the attitude behind it. So it's a matter of, here's a devotee, here, this is the way I should deal. And then if they're pleased with us, if that should result in some facilities or not, that's another thing. That's up to Krishna. Right? That's Daiva. We have our focus. We make our endeavor. The result, we leave up to Krishna. So, this is the point. So here when it says that the fruit of activity is what will not give satisfaction, one will be aggravated and agitated. It didn't say the activity itself. Right? Because fruitive, we need an activity that's done with a particular material motive for enjoyment. Right? It's not an activity. Right? Krishna consciousness is an activity, but it doesn't give this result. Right? Does that make some sense? Right? So, it's easier to look at the ritual, catch those things that are unfavorable, throw them out. That's there. Because there's a lot of mediums that are not very appropriate or useful, actually, in progressive life. But the most important thing is, even those that are left, how those are applied. Right? So, even though he's asked, it's a common question, it's a question for how do you get out of the material world and into Krishna consciousness. But he's already on that platform. But being humble, he's asking that first. When in actuality, then, that's not his platform. He can directly discuss about Krishna because he is already liberated. Okay, so a common man must first know the real position of his life under the influence of the material energy. So here it is, under the influence of material energy, as long as you're conditioned, there is that aspect of being under the influence. That being under the influence is a voluntary position that we allow ourselves to be put into. It's, even though the devotee technically is not affected by the modes, he allows himself to be because he thinks there will be some benefit. So being under those modes, then one may forget actually who one is. So the idea is to know who one is, what is one's life, and how that is affected by the modes. Knowing that, then that can be connected to Krishna for real happiness. Does this make sense? That's why you see Prabhupada mentions in the Brahma Samhita's reading from the purport that one doesn't have to change one's life. It simply has to connect it to Krishna. Right? You connect it to Krishna, naturally what needs to change will change. Right? But one doesn't have to change. Right? Just like you want to make friends with somebody, you don't specifically have to change your lifestyle. But having made friends, then you might adjust things because of that relationship. Does that make sense? So the result will come. But if not, a few things are there given to start the process. But the real process is this, of understanding who we are and our relationship to Krishna. Then one can move forward to real happiness. There's a question on this. Yes.
You just said you must go to Rasa before you can become happy.
You must get to Rasa before you can become happy. Before you can achieve happiness, you must establish your relationship with Krishna. This establishing the relationship actually is very broad. See, there's the within the process of bhava bhakti, which means that one is on the platform having established that relationship. One may not be fully situated in it. That's what the process of bhava sadhana is. How to, after the stage of liberation, how to, you know, eternally situate yourself in that relationship with affection. So, but the first three stages of it, there's five stages in all, the first three stages actually extend themselves all the way down to the beginning stage of Shravana. Because bhava is just before prema. When you have the nine stages, then you have bhava, then prema. So they extend themselves all the way down to there. The last two basically aren't, but those are. In that you are hearing and understanding who you are, that you're servant of Krishna. Right? That will mature into who you specifically are in relationship with Krishna. Then you are adjusting with that, getting used to that, because it is who you are, but you still have to adjust to that. Because we're conditioned to thinking we're something else. You know, we're Lord, now we have to be servant. And then of servant, then this is, you know, specific kind of servant. You know, it's like we're servants within Braj, we're not servants somewhere else. So then it takes some time for the to adjust with that. That's smarter than to remember the Lord, like this. So when those things are full and complete, then one is fully situated in bhava. But before that, then the other stages are there. Shravana means how you say that. You hear, you gain faith, then you take up the association because you understand I am a devotee, so you associate with devotees. You start taking practices of devotees, so you start to adjust with being a devotee. You become situated in that, you get a taste for that, you get attached to that, then it comes to the stage. So the element of rasa, of having a relationship, is there right from the beginning. Like that. So there's no one, no devotee that is not actually connected to Krishna through rasa. It's just a matter of the maturity of that understanding. Like that. The faith. It's said that prema is mature faith. So you start with that faith as it becomes mature. So that's the motive for anything, is rasa. Is that you understand your situation. Within that situation, then you're attracted by the rasa that can be obtained in that situation. Then you make the endeavor within that rasa. Right? So that's why it's important to understand what is the situation you're in. Right? Time, place, circumstance means understanding actually what is the time, place, and circumstance. And that means what is the relationship that's happening right now? What is going on? What position you're actually in. So that then demands that one is present. Right? One is dealing with what's happening right now. Because the problem with food of activities, why rasa is not really tasted, or it appears that it is, but after getting it, that means there's an initial experience of happiness having obtained what one wants to get. But as soon as that's gotten, it goes. Because technically it wasn't actually in the mode of goodness. It was in the mode of passion. Because the present is the action of the verb. The result is the future. That's the mode of passion. So if it's fruiting work, I'm looking to the future, what I'm going to get from this action. So that means, supposedly, while I'm performing the action, I'm not actually present, I'm in the future. That means your time, place, and circumstance won't be right. That means your relationship to who you're dealing with won't actually be full. So that's where it can't be the satisfaction, even on the material platform. So then, that then brings about, the point is that that's what's to be gained, but the duty is being performed because it's one's duty to do this. Not that that's what you're supposed to do. Right? You're not cooking for somebody because, oh, they'll come and then they'll say, oh, this is fabulous, you're the greatest cook in the world, blah, blah. You're cooking it because this is what you're supposed to do in the relationship. Then, when they say this is nice, then that nice is in the present. It wasn't something you're looking forward to, and it didn't come at the moment you want it, how you want it, then you're frustrated, then you move into the past. So then, happiness is eluded because you're always living in the future, and when you don't get it, then you switch into the past. So, the present is never where one exists. So the Vedic concept is, learn how to exist in the present eternally. Right? That's one of the qualities that Brahma mentions that Goloka has. There's only present. There's no future and no past. So everybody is living in the present. But living in the present doesn't mean not understanding your situation and knowing where it's going. Because in the field, you know what are the elements of the field, what are the nature of all the elements in the field, you know what their relationships are, the purposes of them, what can be gained from each of them. That's still all that. That's not what I will now gain from it. Right? So that's duty. So knowing that duty, things work. That's the common point of relationship between the subject and the object, is existence in the platform of duty. Right? Because the masculine principle is establishment of the field, which means the proper performance of duty. The feminine is opulence, but it doesn't work unless it's not satisfied, unless religion is being properly followed. Religion is the field. So the common actually element between the masculine and feminine is religion. Right? Just like a male dog, female dog get along because they both call the religion of being dogs. Right? They don't go outside of that. So that's a common ground. Because the other things are the difference. One is the opulence, one is gaining the opulence, one is existence, one is the security of connecting oneself to existence. That's the rasa. But it's based on the proper performance of duties. That's actually where that's the common point. That's where you can say, there's the relationship. Then everything else is the various tastes and experiences within it. So, when one understands what actually one's position is, right? One's real position in life under the influence of the illusion of energy, I know I am soul, but I'm under the influence of these modes. And these modes are acting like this, and this is my specific conditioned nature. Therefore, if I take that condition, connecting myself fully to Krishna is the soul's duty, eternal, that's Sanatana Dharma. So I have these qualities, so I will connect those to Krishna. So technically it doesn't matter what they are. What varna, what ashram, doesn't matter. If they're connected to Krishna, they're perfect. If they're not connected, then it's nice. But that's as good as it gets, being nice. But so when they're connected, then that's actually the proper performance of my duties. So that's real life. that will give the real happiness. So, like you said, it's based on the rasa, my relationship with Krishna. But that rasa will go through various stages of maturity, naturally. Now it's just, it'll be more external, it's engaging that field, engaging that conditioned nature, but that I am engaging it fully, that is my affection at this stage. That's what I can do. I show my affection for Krishna and appreciation for what he's doing by engaging myself in his service, by engaging my conditioned nature fully in his service.
Voluntarily conditioned.
Yes. How is, how do you say, you know, I guess there's a really deep sentiment behind volunteers. It means something to them, that's why they volunteer. If you're getting paid for it, you know, okay, that's it. But we're not being paid for being the materialist, so we have to be here voluntarily. So it goes much deeper. It's just we're so used to it. See, it's like this. I'll give it another, just, you know, it applies, but a strange example. Someone has no self-esteem, self-confidence. Whatever the reason, you can take it back as far as you want, back to, you know, the mother eating too many pretzels when they were in the womb, so therefore their whole mentality is all tied up in a knot, and that, at least that's what my mother used to tell me. So. You know, what's wrong with him? Oh, his mother ate too many pretzels when he was, you know. So if it's something from conception, something from dealings in the family, as that expands, dealings in the greater family, to friends, to society, whatever it is that is breaking down one's actual ideals, that one loses faith or hope in them, and then one loses that self-confidence, so therefore one doesn't endeavor. But technically, that's a voluntary stage. You don't have to be like that. You can move forward. But then the problem comes up, why one wouldn't just jump out of that and move forward like they always do in the movies, is because in one sense, even though you don't like it, you're safe there because it is a state of existence that you know, and you know how things work. You know, I do this, and then people will criticize, and I'll be a schmo, and then I'll be this and that, and I know who I am, and everybody else knows who I am. So I have my place in society. Well, if suddenly I just dropped that and took up something new, where is my security? So that takes a big leap of faith to do that. So that's why always the Shastra mentions gradually. If you can do it in a moment, that's recommended. Why waste your time? That's Krishna's first recommendation. Just give it up, surrender to Krishna this moment, go back to Godhead. Why play around? Gopis did it, you know, the wives of the, you know, Yajna Brahmins did it, you know, Muchupunama, he did it. So many people did it. So that's best. Why waste your time? If you can't, then follow this process, because then gradually, then you get used to it. You know, different voices, you push it here and there, festivals, you can push that identity, you can do more. Other situations, you try it, it works great, it doesn't work, it goes back, a little bit later you get the courage to try again. So like that, that's actually the point is that we don't have to be, but we're so used to it because it's who we are, who we call ourselves, that's the false ego. But, so the more we can identify with our real ego as servant of Krishna, and know that the conditioned nature is the tools we have to work with to express ourselves, then we can start to transfer that at a slower, quicker rate, whatever speed the rate, to one's actual identity as the eternal servant of Krishna in our actual, how you say, natural service. But it doesn't matter, it works as a fine bridge. It gets us across, just like the example of the thorn gets the thorn out. So it's not that thorns are Maya, therefore I won't use anything, you know, I use the thorn to get this one out. No, this one gets out by using the thorn. The one is, it got in there, now by knowing what a thorn is and how it works, I can use it to advantage to get the other one out rather than just leave it there. Right? So that's the problem, is much of the time is what we call Maya is Maya only because it's fruitive. But now if you use that Maya connected properly to Krishna's service, then it's actually the thorn that gets that, that's the Maya or the thorn that gets the other Maya or the thorn out. So that's why family life, this and that, isn't really the problem. It's the fruitive aspect of it that's entangled. But if one understands the actual position of it, engaging it in the Lord's service, it will actually remove the need for it. The thorn is removed with it. One is in family life because one has the need for it. So by using the family life in the Lord's service, one removes the need. You remove the need, you don't need family life. And if you successfully remove the need, then if it's still favorable in devotional service to be in family life, one can continue in it. It's not a problem. Because it's beneficial. It works for yourself. It's beneficial for the other family members. And it's only given up as a medium when it's no longer favorable. And then you take up something more favorable. So it's a very dynamic process. But it means that one has to be contemplative and know who you are. And know what is the Maya that's there and not be afraid to acknowledge it. Not, oh yes, I'm in Maya, I'm so fallen, I'm so this, I'm so that. And that all this was actually a smokescreen so that no one else would bring up anything about the Maya that I've got because my kulsika is so big, I can't handle that I'm in Maya and I've just changed the subject to something else. But the reality is this person will not acknowledge the Maya they're in. Though, if you talk to them, they seem to think that they're very on top of it, very humble, though they're not. Because the reality is, one's comfortable with it. Someone who knows who they are is comfortable. Right? Like that, I remember seeing one devotee, and a discussion came up this one about Varnashram, and especially about Varna. And everyone, well, how do you understand this, that, or so many things? This one devotee, he just said, I'm a Shudra. I drive this car, I take care of this car, the person who owns this car, I drive them around, I do my best to assist them, and this is what I do for Krishna. I know I'm a Shudra. And this person is such a nice devotee, you know, like that, and very at ease, probably one of the most gentle persons I've seen, gentle in the way of just soft-spoken, but also just in the way of being a gentleman, you know, just cultured, and they're able to be aware of everybody else, because if you know who you are, you can be aware of other persons. If you don't know who you are, you're never really aware of anyone else, because you're too much in your own head. So it's just very nice balance of just honest and truth. This is why I do it for Krishna. I know cars, I like cars, I'm a practical person. I do that, I'm happy. They do it all day, and they're fully absorbed. And you never hear them talking Maya or this or that. They're one of the most balanced persons I've seen. And here's a bit Shudra, right? Oh no, Shudra. Run up the red flag. That's like, you know, like that. And so that's the point. He's in one sense self-realized. So one of the biggest things is fear. That's why one becomes fearless. Fearless means you actually know who you are. You're not afraid of who I am. I'm male, I'm female, I'm young, I'm old. I'm a manager, I'm not a manager. You know, here's a wet paper bag, and you get out of it. Then you say, no, rather than get in the bag and flail around and then have someone else have to open it for you, and then they, if they're cultured, they may not, you know, laugh in front of you or stuff like that. It's just, I'm not a manager. I'm not this. I am this. I am that. But not out of ego. Just, this is what it is. This is not me. But it's the stage I've gotten myself in by my desire. I've identified with this, thought this looked good, I've gotten myself here. So that's what it is, engage in Krishna service, see where it takes you. That's the present. Oh, I'm not that, you know? Then it's hiding, it's false, it's ignorance. Like that. But it's all the time. The point is, it's just like a shastra. If one's attached to family, That's not the problem. The problem is in that attachment, how is that being manifest? How is it engaged? You're attached to the family. Okay, so I'm attached to the family. So therefore, so what are my duties towards this family? I'm attached to them. I'm getting something from them. So what are my duties to reciprocate? And how do those duties, what is that connection to Krishna? Why are those duties there? You know, it means they're attached, so that's why they're in the family. You're attached, that's where you're, so there's something there that you can assist each other in. So the attachment is not the problem, it's the fruit of motive behind the attachment, that's the problem. So we just say attachment's bad, okay, nice. And we'll all sit around and say attachment's bad. At the same time, as if you actually stand back and look at everything we do, it's all attachment. But if the topic's brought up, no. No. That's illusion. That's not self-realization. Self-realization is, I know what kind of attachment I have. And I'm trying my best to see that body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service. So I'm going to use something as a tool to serve Krishna, so therefore I'm using my attachments. I can use brahmacharya to serve Krishna, I can use grihastha to serve Krishna, vanaprastha sannyasa, I can use any of the it doesn't matter. Something has to be used, but unless I know what it is that I have, how I'll use it? So these are very important elements. So that's why he's asked this question to the common person, because the conditioned soul then has this common element. And that commonality can be removed by understanding what is how to live for real happiness. Is that okay? Is that a guess somewhere? Depends what city you're in. If you're in New York and your mommy's out and someone comes knocks on the door and you say, who is it? And they say, I is your friend. You don't open the door. You don't open the door. That's not your friend. Your friend is someone who can actually assist you in Krishna consciousness. So friendship actually depends upon yourself, really. I mean, there is the external, that there's a common platform of which you can interact. That's always what Swajati has called. But at the same time, as for Yudhishthira, there's nobody who's not his friend. And for the practicing devotee, there's no one who's not their friend, because you learn something from everybody. Right? So even if it's seemingly materially unfavorable, actually your best friend, just like Krishna was telling the Pandavas, says Sakuni is actually your best friend. Right? This is the guy that suggested that they bring Draupadi out onto the floor and strip, you know, and wager her. And Krishna's saying he's your best friend. Right? In Mahabharata. Right? So the point is because your ideals are realized, through that you get, you know, Krishna conscious understanding, right? You have to be humble, you have to be tolerant. So those people who behave badly are your friends, in that you get to learn this. So friendship is actually a mentality of oneself. But that technically means the more you can give up fear, the more you know who you are, the more you can give up fear. The more you give up fear, the more you can trust. Trust doesn't mean stupid. Trust means it's bigger. Krishna's taking care. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it works. So, because otherwise, if you get into fear, there's no friends. There can't be. No one can be perfect. Duryodhana couldn't find a good person. Yudhishthira couldn't find a bad one. That didn't mean Yudhishthira is stupid. Right? That's the point. Conservative is, you know, be very careful about, you know, this one's in this category, that one's in that category, this one did this, this one did that, so don't associate. Liberal is, no, we have to be, you know, this and don't worry and this and that. But the point in the middle is give the space, but be careful. That's the balance. So, in other words, how far someone can respond properly in a relationship, that far it can go. Relationships are real. We may have made or may not have had a good experience, but relationships are real. We may or may not have had good experience with fire, but fire is real. Right? I got burnt in the fire. I almost drowned in the water. I almost got blown away by the wind. Right? You know, I got buried in an avalanche. But I don't like earth, water, fire, air, heat, you know, but they exist. So I may have had bad experience in relationships. Family messed around with me, friends messed around with me, society messed around with me, but relationships still exist. It's just those were the wrong ones. Or they didn't know how to deal properly. Right relationships, wrong endeavor. Does that make sense? It doesn't. Not really. Why? I mean, what doesn't make? I'm saying, what specifically doesn't make sense?
Mass
and the means you've never had a bad experience in your family or never had friends that gave you the trouble. Say again? You do. So, mess is probably American slang for it didn't work nicely. The relationship between you and members of your family or society, your friends, was not working well. You may have got some disturbance from that. That's all that can be said by mess. Your family life's a mess. Means it's, you know, mess to take many things that are organized and move them around. It's a big mess. Does that make sense now? Forgive but don't forget, yeah. Like that. Forgive but don't forget. But in forgetting, it doesn't mean that we should mention it. That's also important. Is if someone's done something wrong, if there's no need to mention it, it doesn't need to be brought up. But you're aware. You're trying to be Krishna conscious, the friend is not. But that friendship itself is not detrimental to the Krishna consciousness, so it doesn't specifically help it. Does one maintain that and try to, you know, help them forward, or one discards it? No one maintains it. Anything means anything that's directly Krishna conscious, anything favorable to Krishna consciousness, and anything neutral doesn't have to be given up. Because there's a lot of stuff that's neutral. You know what I'm saying? You part your hair, you take the part back this much. You take the part back this much. It doesn't matter. It's neutral. Does that make sense? Those you keep. Anything that's, not favorable to our particular endeavor to Krishna consciousness, like things that get you to Vaikuntha. We don't want to go to Vaikuntha. We want to go to Goloka. those are given up, and things that are against Krishna consciousness, that's given up. But one sees that in that relationship, that one only takes it as far as it can go without that sacrifice. You know what I'm saying? Because Krishna consciousness is not the common element. Therefore, one is not obliged on a platform of sentiment to give up more than required. You know what I'm saying? In other words, your values do not have to be adjusted for theirs. In other words, that's the point at which you agree to disagree. Does that make sense? You wear what you wear, they wear what they wear, you eat what you eat, they eat what they eat, you know, they do what they, you know. So whatever is the common point, that you maintain. And whatever is, and encourage that, and whatever is not, you leave. Because you'll have a lot of those in life. Because like when you get into, especially in the realm of occupation, like that, there's tons of people like that. They're just acquaintances, or they may be closer acquaintances. You have to deal with them. So being able to deal with people on a neutral platform that's very pleasant and workable is fine. Like that. In fact, devotees should be able to deal with everybody like that. Does that make sense? But in the same line, you're not obliged to go beyond. So they say, oh, you're my friend, you should do this. Or that. You're not. Because your friendship is not based on that. You know what I'm saying? It's not based on the Krishna consciousness, therefore you're not obliged to go outside of that. The things within it, within what is within the relationship, that works. Okay, you rode them on your bicycle, they ride you on theirs. That's there. But, you know, to not, you know, attend the temple program because you have to ride them on your bicycle, that's not required. You'll ride them on another time. Does that make sense? In other words, you have to be yourself and that this is who I am. And if being who you are means you lose so-called friends, that's life. You're going to lose them anyway. It's just a matter of you lose them on your terms or you lose them on their terms. Right? It's a matter of do you quit or are you fired? Right? You know it's incompatible, so don't respond. You know what things may nourish the relationship. You just stop doing those. If they approach you, you respond. If they don't approach you, you leave it. And with time, it'll just fade. It'll fade anyway. So you don't have to do anything. Does that make sense? If it's favorable, you go forward. Okay. We'll take this after. It's just getting late. So we'll end here and then we'll continue with questions for anyone who would like to stay. Bhagavatam ki, Prabhupada ki, Sattva Vedha, Prabhu like, it means the concept is Vedic, but it's in the way of, let's say, like a king. A king gives land to another king or the Vaishyas.
Right.
And as long as they don't do anything that would warrant it being taken away, it's with them for generations.
Yeah, I understand that.
So that's how the housing thing was supposedly done in the beginning. But the thing is it has to be prepared. I thought it was already done. I thought that was already done when we signed it.
Well, it is, essentially, but they want to change the agreement. The agreement is changed in such a way that there's absolutely no right of rescission for any determination by trustees who we don't even know who they are. I've been 35 years, and I've seen places like Cook Court, sold out. I was in New York when that went down. It's just, I want some right of...
Who's pushing it?
Well, I think it's the way John was pushing it, and Josh was pushing it down. And basically, they said they're going to have one of my godmothers talk to me. I just wrote up a thing.
Who's behind it? Who's behind that? Where does they get their money?
I don't know. They're the housing. Anyways,
it's just the new housing board flexing their muscles.
Yes. And it's perfectly all right with me to sign the document, but I just want included in the document some kind of precision. And I just wonder.
There should be something that it can be
reviewed. That's all.
That's all. That's all. You just said. I said I would have a tendency to bring it to the Muslim community council, whatever it is, bring it up to the voters.
Oh, is he the one that has the community council?
Yeah, I think you bring it up to them, they can make enough stink to have
them. All right, I'll talk to them.
So his highness is, because it's ISKCON land, that's just the way it is, voluntary.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I have your problem. Yeah. If I start smoking or something,
I'm sure he likes it.
I wouldn't think he's any But the thing is, you know, I don't want
to. You can't get it, it's just somebody's got a bug in there.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I've seen it.
So you just send it to them in a very non-emotional way. I'm fine, but I just need to know what's going on there. I agree with it. Is this gone? You're volunteer. You're pushing it. You're unqualified. Yes, of course. But I have seen this, and I just don't want it to be able to help us. So if I deserve it, yeah, fine. But there should be something that is, I'm convinced.
Right. I just want to know if I should stick to my gun.
Thanks. But you know, but in a
non-violent.
So how to deal with that? Because they do support each other in the Krishna consciousness, in the realm sphere that they deal in. You may have to look at a couple of things here. I mean, is it a problem that the person of influence was not approving of this relationship? Are they male or female?
Female.
Okay. So now, you have to also look at it if the female, if there is the element of the aspect of that person's done something to me, so you're my friend, you shouldn't have any connection to them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because that then will be there. So it depends upon the relationship with that person and what is the nature of it on how much that's affected. Just like it's a rule in Dharma Shastra that if someone's insulted the family, then no one in the family should keep, you know, any close relationships with that person. Because maybe you as an individual can appreciate and know, but the rest of the family, it doesn't. So because of the inherent nature of the, you know, jealousy, envy, and possession, possessiveness is there in family relationships. The safe rule is if one person has actually insulted someone in the family and that hasn't been corrected, no one in the family deals with them. Does that make sense? So that we're talking about what's outside, so you have to look at that. Is that a factor in this? You know? In other words, has this person done anything? But what is this not friendship? The friendship means, what is it? What is the specifics? Can they give? Bad means?
They seem to think they get off the boat and they should get off it.
But do you?
No, that's the thing. Like, it always seems like that because you sit downstairs and want to go upstairs because she has a problem with the people that I live with. So you just go upstairs and it's like, oh, I'm going to go back to the house.
Can you make a connection between this person and the other person? He's the friend and the authority. Okay, but then that means they're only seeing, means it's like this. There are pictures in the mind of the person, the authority, right? Of the friend that has happened that are the stronger influence on their decision. So unless you can change those pictures by replacing them with some new ones that are favorable, then it's a problem. You know what I'm saying? So this person has to prove that they're nice, just like this. You have a guy like Pretty Boy Floyd, right? Murdered so many people, robbed so many banks, you know, every fraud that you can imagine has happened, right? But he's nice to his mother. So his mother thinks he's a nice kid. Yes, that's what you're dealing with. So therefore, it means they don't know this person. So they're making decisions on what they've seen, what they've heard, which is something, right? Otherwise, why is it there? Unless it's complete misinformation, then that's another thing. That's also, but if it's not, if the things that they say are elements that this person has done, but there may be a completely different motive behind it, or it's, you know, it's one of those unfortunate situations, then you somehow know that to bridge that gap. How? It's slow, it's hard, but if the friendship is worth it, it's worth trying. Does that make sense? So that's one element. Two is then all those things that are the outside, the relationship that you do, then if that friendship is close and it's worthwhile, it's that close, discuss those things. Why are you doing those things? could you improve? How could you make that better? Because that's another way. Make those things go away, and then with time, then the attitude towards them will change. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So the point is relationships are worthwhile. Right? It means we have to have them. But it's a matter of keeping the proper understanding of what's there and how much to deal. You know? And so that's very delicate when you're dealing in the feminine world. You know, it's a very, very fine line there. So, but it's important. It means friends are important, deeply they're important, because otherwise then where is that expressed? If that can also be... See, there's another thing is that in a very, the authority, it can be explained to them in a very straightforward, non-emotional way, you know, according to etiquette, with respect, but just, if you mean something to this person, and this relationship means something to you with a friend, then there's a connection there. But they may not understand it or understand what it is. You have to think about what is in the relationship that is real that actually makes it worthwhile. You know, something of substance, not something external. You have to get down to what actually, what it is. What is the quality or qualities that make it work? You know what I'm saying? Not, okay, she's cool, I'm cool. Or this is not that kind of stuff. It's that they... do this for me in my life, you know? They add this to my life. Does that make sense? That element then has to be, one, understood by yourself, that you're clear on it. Then, if it's clear to you, then you find a way to make it clear to the authority. Does that make sense? Because right now they won't know. Does that make sense? That's where the emotional thing should be. Not, you know, what is this? I'm big, you never let me have my friends, and you always this, that. No, that'll never get me anywhere, because what that does is then they think the relationship with you is breaking down, therefore, because of the sense of possessiveness, they will become insecure. So therefore, those things that are creating the insecurity, namely this friendship, has to go. You understand? So it has to be taken care of in a way that the authority does not feel in any way insecure, and that your relationship with them is going to be disturbed. It's the way it is, it's great, it's good, but this is also there, and it's important because, you know, we have a variety of relationships, so this is also very important in our lives. Does that make sense? So, therefore, you explain is that I'd love to bring them in. I'd like you to, you know, friends. I'd like my friends to be important to you, but you've expressed this not. But I can't be without the friends, and you know, that, like that. And so that then explain. But and take as long as it takes. You know what I'm saying? In other words, if it doesn't happen overnight, you're not dealing with a man. You're dealing with a woman. You have to take as long as it takes. You understand? Man, you can make it open up, they don't respond, close back up, walk out the door. Fine. But with the ladies, then they have their own problems, their own backgrounds. And maybe she had a friend when she was young, so important, and her authority shut it down. And so therefore then they can't, you know, it just bothers it. So, in other words, it's stuck in there that it's a thing of righteousness. Women are very righteous. Everything has to be correct. So, therefore, even though she didn't like it and couldn't understand it, still doesn't understand it today, this kind of relationship is wrong. So, therefore, you're having that. It's wrong. You may have a whole psychological history behind the authorities having to deal with. That's why, don't worry if it takes time. That's what I'm saying. If the relationship's worth it, put in the time. Okay. Something else?
Thank you.
the worm do anything that a worm should not do? But do we as a human ever do things that a human shouldn't do? So that means a worm's bad. Right? Like that. So that's the element, is that that is the introspection, that is the self-realization, that one is humble. Because one's humble, we can take that because you know who you are. Right? Does that make sense? So being realistic means you know, okay, I have this much intelligence, it's this kind of intelligence, it works this way with the mind, I have these kind of identities, I have these abilities, I have these desires. How to work with them. Yeah, so it's bad, but then it's because one can be humble in that state because one knows what it is one has to engage one's Lord's service, because we are the servant. I may have all these qualities, but whether I have the qualities of the emperor or of a king or a local village head or just somebody gets told what to do, it doesn't matter because it's not us. It's a quality that we engage in Krishna's service. That's why Yudhishthira is humble. He has the ability to be emperor of the world. He can be king of the universe. Right? They're in this. So that's not a big emperor of the world. Easy. He can be emperor of the universe. So. But that's what quality he has that he can do for Krishna. But he is a servant of Krishna, so therefore the humility is there. Because that's actually humility, as you know, because the other humility is not real. You know, the two friends, I'm the most qualified. No, I'm the most qualified. No, I'm the most qualified. Right? You know. Like that. And then the other guy makes the clever statement that the stumped the first one, so therefore he's very proud that he's the most followed because he got in the last word. I'll give an example. One senior devotee had an assistant. Another devotee came and was like a guest, so therefore he had the assistant bring him a drink. Then the guest was going to take the glass and go take it to the sink and wash it. The senior man asked the guest, "No, please, you know, since you're, you know, a senior person, you allow my servant to do it, he will be benefited." Right? But out of so-called humility, which translates as pride in their so-called humility, the guest took the glass to the sink and washed it. And not that the servant felt bad, but the senior person who wanted the servant to get the benefit of serving another senior person felt bad. So was that actually humility? No. So humility is, there would be the understanding, I am the guest, so therefore I have to do the duties of a guest, even though I don't like anyone serving me, but I still, it's my duty as a guest that he gets to do the services that he gets to do. In other words, he's in charge, because by taking the glass and washing it, then the guest is in charge, right? But by the guest being a guest and being taken care of as a guest by the host, means the host is in charge. That's humility. It's sometimes very different. That's why self-realization, that's why you can put the two together, because only someone self-realized is actually humble. We know the form of behaving culture, the ritual. That's why it's being said is that it's what's, the ritual is important. Never in discussion should the ritual thought to be not important. A smarta is one who follows the ritual. It's not because they follow the ritual that we call them smartas. We call them smartas because they follow the ritual without actually understanding what the purpose is, or they follow it simply for a fruit of result. The ritual is never, that's why tradition is never to be looked down upon. Because it is a proper form for expression.
Devotees say,
say, we don't care for you, we're above the rules and all that. No, you just follow a different set of rules. And then very, very, very strict. Very, very strict. But because they don't know the science of religion, they don't know they've created their own. Religion means the inherent nature of something. So, you know, you want to be a punk, there's an inherent nature of what is a punk. Right? A guy with long hair, you know, parted down the middle, in a ponytail, wearing a three-piece suit. Is that a punk? No. So it's against the religion of a punk. Shave the head and put it in the suit, maybe. You know, add a few, you know, I think, you know, piercings in the eyebrow. And then you get, then it's a cool punk, okay? You know, okay, an uptown punk, right? But, it means everything has, that's why you can call it that. You know what I'm saying? How do you call, how do you say someone's a kid? Because they follow the religion of a kid. How do you say someone's an adult? They follow that. So that's the thing, is that all this discussion basically is religion. Right? That's generally where the problem comes up. Philosophy we're very good at. Religion, generally we don't know it exists. And if we do, we limit it to a few rituals. We come to Mangalartik, okay, we ring the bell at the door, you know, maybe we wash our feet before, not depending on how fanatic we are. We come in, we offer obeisances. You know, like that, you know, when the RTN, the offer obeisances, you know, you see the sheet of prayer, you go off and chant, or do, like that, you know, so, that's it. And then everything else is free, but no, religion means that we can't change. So that means everything you do, that's religion. All your culture, all your interaction, all your values, all that, that's all religion. So understanding that, then you can understand what is relationship. Because relationship, religion is how relationships work. What is, what does the individual do? What is the religion of the individual? And what is, when you combine those individual religions, what adjustment is made for them? Right? Something has to adjust. That makes sense. It's always a test. Like in grammar, you combine words, something adjusts. Something's added, something's dropped. You know? It's just how it works. It's not just happens, it has to. I have a car. Okay, I have a car. I want to add the car to my paraphernalia. So I have a house, right? So I want to add a car to the house. How do I do that? Stick it in my living room, front lawn, front porch. No, I have to have a garage. Right? So the garage is the connection between my house and the street. The car lives on the street. I live in the house, but the car is mine. The car must be protected. So therefore I have a garage, which is the bridge between, because what is the floor of the garage? Right? Nice, you know, nice, fine, you know, what are the things, those little wooden slabs you put them together? Parquet? Wooden parquet or something? Or Italian marble? Or no, it's cement like a street. You know, or something. In other words, it is a street. It's a street with a house over it. Right? So that's the bridge. So everything is like that. There's nothing that's not. So that's religion. So understanding religion means you know who you are, you know who everybody else is, you know what your relationships are, you know how all this connects to Krishna, you know our relationship with Krishna, Maya's material energy's relationship with Krishna, you know Krishna's relationship with those in the spiritual realm, you know the relation between those in the spiritual realm with each other. That's religion. The actual, you know, exact delineation of it, that's the tattva, that's the that's a science, that's a philosophy. How it's operated, that's religion. That's why we can say, we can, well, Sanatana Dharma, that's the eternal religion of the soul. But we can also refer to Varnashram as Sanatana Dharma. That spins the head of the biggest pundits in our society. That's because they own the religions. Because if we follow Varnashram, it means how we connect our conditioned nature to do what we should be doing in the spiritual world. It means connecting our body, mind, and constitution. So what's the difference? If I'm in the spiritual world, and my spiritual body performing my spiritual activities, body, mind, and words is engaged according to my nature of Krishna service. I'm in the material world, I'm still affected by my conditioned nature, but I engage that conditioned nature, body, mind, and words in the Lord's service. What is the difference? There's none. Therefore, we can, with impunity, say Sanatana Dharma and Varnashram are identical. That's how we say it. That doesn't mean how others interpret it. Yes.
My understanding is that I know this my father, but that's the agreement between the nation and the nation. But I have a spiritual master who is not engaging in the
Swadharma. Here, question is, I have my Swadharma.
Swadharma is conditioned nature.
Yeah, conditioned nature. I know who I am. I know how to engage myself. But my spiritual master has a different kind of idea. So then it would appear that by surrendering to that, that would be more important than the conditioned nature. Yes. Well, one is you pick a spiritual master who's Swajaki. Right? This is also a very misunderstood point, is that even when advances in devotional service, one still acts according to the conditioned nature. That's what you have, right? It means, okay, you have a devotee. He's in a male body. But in the spiritual world, he's in a female body. So now that he has become self-realized, now naturally, of course, even though he's in the male body, he starts to act like a female, right? He dresses like one and talks like one. Yes, no? Yes, no? What do you think? No. Okay, so but at the same time, even though that's so ridiculous, it's not even like worth answering the question. It's like a rhetorical question. When we actually apply it into our life, that the spiritual master acts according to their conditioned nature, then we say, oh, this is wrong. And how can someone be Swajati? Well, that's Maya. So that means we don't even believe this point in philosophy. Right? Because the point is Rupa Goswami himself says we should associate with like-minded devotees. That means that the way they explain, the way they deal, the things that they do, those things, it makes sense to us. So we can relate. But it's not that it's wrong. Just like you have the pandavas, right? They're all pure devotees. Someone appreciated Bhima. Right? Like the Madhvas, Bhima is the main guy. Because he's Hanuman, he's Vayu. Mukhi Pran, that's Madhvacharya, is the same person. Madhvacharya, Kali Yuga, is Bhima, there is Hanuman, is Vaya. So for them, the Mahabharata is all about Bhima. Right? We know as a story, it's about Yudhishthira, but we know the one that's really being brought up is Arjuna. So, but there's no problem with this. So if somebody prefers Arjuna or someone prefers this one or that one, it doesn't matter. That's individual taste. point is that's fine. Devotees can be themselves and move in those circles, and it's fine. And so that's there, but you have to identify that it's okay to be like that. You have 2-3 devotees in the community that you can relate to, you're close with them, and others are more acquaintances, and it's fine. As long as you're enhancing your Krishna consciousness and this and that, it's not a problem. So, in that way, if you know who you are, then you can properly relate to others. Then you can properly interact with others. But unless you know who you are, they can't know who you are. If you don't know, how are they going to know? Right? You have this living entity. Sometimes it's on all fours. Sometimes it walks on its back legs. Sometimes it climbs a tree, meows and purrs. Sometimes it barks and growls. What is it? You know, but it always does the same thing. It always barks, it always wags its tail, it always has fleas, it always slobbers. Hey, it's a dog. Right? So that's the point. The dog knows who they are. And therefore you can identify, dog. So that's the point. Someone who knows who they are can be identified by others. Then others can be comfortable with that. Either they identify that's not someone who I want to get close to, and then you have a relationship, or that's someone I'd like to get close to, and you have a relationship. You don't know, they don't know, and then nobody has close relationships. So that's a problem. So that's why the humility and all these things, you put it together, is that you perform your religious duties. That means, in other words, you see what are the rituals of your existence that have to be followed. What are the rituals that work with the wife, with the kids, with, you know, the other people you work with in your service, or in your neighbors, or people you have to work with in occupations, or there's certain things that work, those things work, but those are all rituals. Nothing's not ritual. It's just that there are rituals that are directly connected to the Lord, and there's ones that can be connected to the Lord. Right? And then there's ones that we could be, but we don't connect them. Like that. You know, like the same mudras used in the worship. Right? We use mudras in the preliminaries of worship to purify things. In the actual worship, we don't use them. Like one or two. But now we don't use them. Like we're going to offer a lamp, we don't use the one for the lamp. We don't use that. By Kunta, they do. Bona fide is directly connected, we don't use them. Does that make sense? So, like that, it's just superior and inferior, depending upon what is your purpose. Right? There are rituals that are connected with Brahman. So this question, how does someone get out of material life? That's connected with Brahman. It's knowing God. Then as he has entered into it, it's Paramatma. Right? So then you know all the different aspects of how the energies work. Right? Then you know the person. Does that make sense? Then you know the person. So, in other words, you're trying to get from being a gross materialist to someone who is a Brahmana, one who knows Brahman. You know what the doors are, how to deal with material endeavor. So that's the Brahman platform, because by operating it, you get yourself to the Brahman platform. But it works efficiently because there's a person behind it, and that's Vishnu, that's Paramatma. So you have a relationship with him. When that matures, then we have a particular relationship about the mother. It's fascinating. So all this discussion is actually about Krishna on the Brahman platform. All these things about the universe, how it's created, how it's made, how we got into the universe, how we get out of the universe, it's all so that we know how to situate ourselves in transcendence. then behind it there's a person. That's the karmata. Then that person does things. He has friends, he has relatives, he has activities. And we have relation. That's the karmata. So that means all topics can fit into these three categories. So even if you're talking about, you know, chemistry, it's technically about Brahman. But it's avidya because they don't know its connection to Krishna. So if you're discussing the chemistry and connection to Krishna, then it's called aparavidya, or ignorance engaged in the Lord's service. Right? There's ignorance, then there's, you know, secondary knowledge, and there's primary knowledge. So you have primary, which is Krishna. Right? And how to get there. Secondary knowledge means knowledge that can be engaged to get to Krishna. And avidya means knowledge, all that other knowledge that's not engaged in Krishna's service, right? The problem, sometimes devotees make the mistake that there is Vedic knowledge and there's modern knowledge. No, there's Vedic knowledge. When it's not connected to Krishna, it's called modern. Right? That's how Manu describes it. Right? That's what he says. When you take modern knowledge and activities and don't connect it to the Vedas, it's called modern. Right? So this concept of modern has been around since, you know, Krishna spoke Dharma to Brahma. Yes?
Modes.
Modes.
Modern comes from modes.
And this one specifically, just so people don't feel bad, more vigorous. You're going to make anyone feel bad. They feel bad anyway, but we're trying our best not to make them feel bad. Does that make some sense? Or?
And finally, we got another 5 minutes.
The worm performs this duty properly, yes.
As an individual soul, we are basically the same level. Can we get to the form of
Okay. So the soul is the same in the worm and in the human, but the worm performs it properly and the soul doesn't. Because the worm is by the modes of nature, it's just, it doesn't have a choice. They're going to go through the reactions of their previous activities in their scheduled fashion, and they're going to respond to them in a scheduled fashion. Right? That's the thing. With a human being, the difference is it's voluntary. Because you have voluntary, then you can choose. Right? So that's the tathagata position. I can choose between spiritual and material. While the animals are just material. There is no spiritual. Does that make sense? So there's no free will. Only predestiny. A human being, free will and predestiny function simultaneously. Means you're free to do whatever you like with your previous, with the predestiny that's come to you from your previous free will. Predestiny is the fruit or the result of my previous free will. Right? So what I do with it, that's up to me. But the animal is set what they're going to do with it. Predestiny and free will, how they combine at the same time. Okay. It is time for lunch. and you're going to be 2 minutes late. And you tell another boy to save you a place. Okay, so that was your free will when you asked them to save you a place. Right? Now, after that 2 minutes when you get to the Prasadam Hall, right, then your place is there. So that's now your predestined. That is your spot. Now you have free will whether you want to take it or not. You could either go and sit down there beside the hall somewhere else. Or you come and find someone else is sitting in your spot. So you could say, no, this is my spot, tell them to get out. Or you could, you know, with your free will, decide to go sit somewhere else. Does that make sense? Bark is their spot, they will bark. Is that okay? So, or let's say they ask, okay, who wants to do the idea in the evening? And you say, oh. Then the evening comes and there's so many other things happening, you know, you would have rather actually be doing the other things. So now if predestiny is for you to do the yajna, now you can either do it or go and make another arrangement and not do it. Or you could do it, but be thinking about what you could have been doing, and therefore then no one's impressed with the yajna, and then from your free will of not doing it nicely, then the predestiny that comes later is you don't get to do it. Or you can decide, okay, I said I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it nicely. And then people are happy, and then they're willing to have you do more yajnas. Then the result of your exercise of your free will to properly do the yajna means you get to do more of it. You turned aside from destiny, it's what you do with it. Spot, what do you want to do with it? You can keep it, you can give it away. Okay, let us say you did this service, and then they say, okay, I'm giving you 100 rupees for that service. You can keep the 100 rupees, you can give it away, you can say, no, no, I don't want it. That's your free will. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So your free will now is dealing with what is the result of your previous free will, right? And your predestiny is the result of, hang on, it's just, you understand? With your free will, you do an activity, that will give you a result. What you do with that result is your next free will. Okay, so we'll end here. Say it quick, it's time for it. right? The mother-in-law that's giving the daughter-in-law trouble, they're both from other families, neither of them from that family. And the daughter, you could say, she's from that family, when she grows up, she gets married and goes to another family. So all women are from another family. So, therefore, they're family. You have to work it out. You may be more careful, you may be more cautious, like you said, forgive, but maybe don't forget. But it doesn't mean that you don't forgive. How many times can you forgive? A lot. Because we judge. What is to forgive? Means you're going to judge anyway. But it's a matter of whether you judge them in a positive light or a negative light. It's a matter of whether you judge them in a positive light or a negative light. Okay. Devotee A makes some comments about devotee B. Devotee B has done something that, according to devotee A's information, is not right. The information may be wrong, but they've got it through persons who they trust. Where they got it from, they don't bother checking up, so it may be completely bogus. So devotee A then behaves in devotee B's mind in an unjust way. But devotee B looks at it that, well, devotee A is simply trying to do their service nicely to Krishna. They don't have the right information. What they've done, you could say technically is not correct, but their motive behind it wasn't incorrect. Therefore, you see? Does that make sense? Or you could look, take it even farther if it's more senior position. They can't help but behave that way. They're so attached, they are going to do like this. So, myself being the one who's supposed to be less attached, therefore I've got to be the one to let go. Because they can't. Say again? Forgiving. But see, if you don't forgive, it means you're holding on. If you're not forgiving, it means you're holding on to something that there's something they've done wrong. They've injured you in some way. Right? And that's incorrect. So you're not going to let them get away with it. I'm saying judging always has to be there. That's what we mean by introspection, self-realization means you're judging. But it doesn't necessarily mean here necessarily right or wrong. Judging can go, it means if you... Okay. Intelligence means you're discerning between items. Once you discern them, the mind decides which one is the one you choose. Okay, so what you've chosen, you will take as right. What you've rejected, you take as wrong. Whether it's right or wrong is another thing. It depends on whose perspective you take. But, in other words, in this process, you'll start with the intellectual. Right? And the idea is through that, you influence the emotion. Does that make sense? So, that's important. Because ultimately that's the quality of a Brahman, is forgiveness. One can say it's truth, it's this, it's that, yes. But the quality of the character is forgiveness, because that is truth. It's not so important. Right? Kshatriyas can't forgive, because they actually think they are that. They actually think their ego has some validity. You understand? The Brahman knows all ego doesn't have any validity. Therefore, they forgive him. You can do that, but that itself was a judgment. Was an to do the process you just mentioned was an analyzation and was a judgment. I analyzed that this is all the better they can do. It may not be the best, but that's what they can do. That's the analyzation. So therefore, I forgive. It was a judgment. So it's we can't get around that. It's just depends how you see. Most of our problem, or a lot of our problem, is semantics. Semantics. Do you know semantics? Semantics, where are you from?
Germany.
Semantics means, probably you could say, it's a particular definition you give to a word. Okay? So, in one person's mind, that same word conjures up something bad. In another person, it's very nice. You know what I'm saying? So, like that, then we need to... In other words, broad-minded, we can accommodate. We understand others are individuals, they have their motives, they have their needs, they're trying to work those things out. Therefore, we don't get bothered by that. What does affect our service, we try to work around that, but it's not taking us personal. It's just that's what they have to do. This person has to, means they have, their identity is they do big service. They need to do something big means they need to have facility to do something big. But actually, they're not a big manager, and they don't necessarily aren't good at doing big service. So therefore, them trying to take your facility is just what they have to do to be at peace with themselves. It doesn't mean I allow them to do it, but it doesn't, you know, so I work, but they don't. But it doesn't mean that I take it personally that this person has something against me. So, this forgiveness doesn't mean surrender. Forgiveness means that you don't let it get in the way of whatever is your natural relationship. Right? So if your relationship is close, then that remains. It doesn't get in the way. If it's not close, then it stays that way, but it doesn't become nothing. You understand? But it doesn't mean that one's foolish and allows improper things to happen. Right? If it's in it outside of one's area of influence, then one goes with it. What can you do? But if one can do something about it, then one does. Right? Because you're supposed to be engaged fully in Krishna's service, so if this other person throws things that takes away the facility that allows you to be fully, therefore you work to get it back. But if in doing it you see, well, actually that was also a false idea on my side, I don't actually need that. Then you adjust with the new understanding. Then this is an answer to the first question, or one of the first questions over there. How do you know someone's your friend? Then you understand this person's a friend, even though they don't know it and they don't act like it. Because they've just taught you to understand more about yourself by them acting in a way where they completely don't understand themselves. Someone's really doing bad to you. It's your mind that thinks it's bad to you. If someone's trying to harm you. If someone's trying to harm you, it's the mind how you deal with it. Because if someone's trying to harm you, you just adjust so they don't. understand? It's just like this. You're on a chessboard. You move your piece. They move theirs. Their piece is going to attack yours. You move yours. You don't say, well, this is personal. Why are you trying to take my... You just move. So that's the thing. They go to attack you. You just act in such a way that their attack doesn't work. If you're forgiving and not forgetting, hear what is meant by forgiving and not forgetting means don't be foolish. Right? This person has a tendency to cheat. So therefore you're being aware of if any cheating may come up. But you're not thinking this person's a cheater. No, they have a tendency towards cheating. Okay, maybe 24/7, but so therefore in your dealings and you're just watching and it doesn't happen. You watch it doesn't happen, maybe they won't cheat you. Because they know that you know that they cheat. Yeah, you be careful. You be thoughtful. You be introspective. You understand who you are, so you know how to respond, how to act, what you should be doing, how to respond to what others do. Because unless you know who you are, also you don't know how to respond. You're a manager, another manager is trying to take your position. You, as a manager, manage it so that they don't. They're a manager, you're not a manager, they're trying to take your position. You go to another manager that makes sure he doesn't. So unless you know who you are, you won't know how to respond. You're in a subordinate position. You can't change. Can't change what? You can't change the situation. But the point is we're talking about free will. Free will is not in changing the present situation. Free will is what you do with the present situation. Right? By what you do, that may change it in the future, but it's not what changes it right now. It is the present. It's only the present. It's what you're doing with it. Yes, but if you're focused on the present, then you're not worrying about it. You know that that's what you have to do for the future, but it's not a disturbance. Because if you're focused on the future, that's more the passion. That's why it bothers you. If you're focused on the present, what do I do in this situation? Then you just deal with it. Okay? Serious rain. Because it was that last question. Finished as an animal, you'll be taking birth in exactly the same person.
Yeah. The names may be changed to protect the innocent, but... It's the same thing. Where else are your desires? That's what your desires were. It got you an animal birth, and then you come back to wherever you were. Just like it's the end of the universe, you go back into the Lord, and then when it expands again, you go right back to where you were.
So you go to another universe where
the same place. Wherever it is, if you know, I mean, you know, in this universe now, in this Kali Yuga, now they're called the cockroaches instead of the beetles, then you have to go to another universe to listen to your music. Yeah. Yeah, you know, and if they're singing, you know, another slat in the parquet floor, you know, then... Won't he be a person with more realization? That is the theory. The theory is by going to hell and going through the animal species, you're supposed to understand this is not worthwhile. So when you come back into that place again, and now you're the cute little southern gentleman with the mustache and the goatee, like who's the guy at the Colonel Sanders, you know. And so now this time maybe, you know, so this is what should be. Says, I don't know, I have a bad feeling about this chicken business, you know. But so he goes out and buys some mobile business of chicken, right? You know, something like that. But generally what happens is the non-devotees never make that decision. Not one lifetime. Many, 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 many lifetimes. So we're talking millions of lifetimes. We're talking also the hell and the animals in between. Because the animals don't decide. Yeah. as it is, you're you know, someone's not regressing you, and you're asleep, and you're not having shut the door nicely, and people can walk in and harass you. Like that. Yes. Also, you never know. It's just like you're saying before, it's who the person was. They may have been done this, they may not have done this kind of thing, but they have been the previous you. See, also, it's just like this. It means one of two, means you also have two other alternative explanations of that point. Is that one, if you're talking devotees, devotees especially, they've done everything there is in the universe. They've been everybody. They've been Brahma, Indra, you name it. They've been every species, every position, everything. And now we finally decided, nothing here. Right? So if they've been Napoleon or Mozart or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's fine. You know, but he's made no. Then the other alternative is if you read it in a book, a person's done, let's say, hundreds and hundreds of regressions, what are they going to put in their book? The ordinary one? Yeah, I was born in this family, you know, on the, you know, Lower East Side, and, you know, my mother used to wash clothes for people, and my father was a mechanic, and, you know, two of my, you know, 15 brothers died, and the other ones, you know, did this, and, you know, then the, you know, the war came, and the bomb blew up our house, and that took up, you know, took out another 12 or 15 brothers, and, you know, like that, and, you know, I got married, and it was okay, and had a few kids myself, and, you know, one died of scarlet fever, you know, like that, and, you know, one grew up and also became a mechanic, but then the car, one of the cars fell on and he got killed. Then I got old, and then I died. No. So therefore, they're only going to put in the book the one where the guy was Napoleon or this or that. And he has to sell the book, right? He's writing the book to make money. That's there also. Just like if you look in an astrology book, what sample charts are there? Joe Schmo? No. You know, Napoleon, Genghis Khan, Krishna, Mahatma Gandhi. Of course, you got to get into a few Hitler and things like that. But they're nothing to be enamored by. This new age stuff is as old as it gets. It's just offshoots of the Vedic knowledge. But they've kind of turned it into, before this kind of stuff, you know, was karma or jnana. So it was either pious or impersonal and renounced. But they've dreamed up this new form where it dabbles in these things. They're impersonalists, but totally attached. Very dangerous. Because how are you going to be a good sense gratifier if you're an impersonalist? Right? It doesn't bother them yet. Because they're too impersonal to know that it should. Like that. What to do? But the point is all this new age stuff was going on a long time ago. It was very popular, at least, I mean, America, I can't say other places, but in America in the 30s, 1940s, very popular, like alternative cultural magazines, like, I think UFO, and all those things came out at those times, 40th times, all these weirdo mega conspiracy theories, like that, and all these alternative Ouija boards, and playing Mahjong, you know, whatever it is, all that, that's all, that was like, the, you know, how you say, say, the rage of those times in more eclectic circles. Like that. It was what they did. And technically, if you watch, it goes back even further. It was just, let's talk about it. It didn't become a fashion. But, you know, you go back into the 1830s and it was there. You know, I mean, you go back, anytime anyone came in touch with the Vedic culture, there was some appreciation. Right? And before, I think before the Spanish Inquisition, then all this stuff was pretty standard part of, you know, village life. You know, but the person who could, you know, work the Ouija board, you know, was the next one in the pond, you know, like that. So that all kind of disappeared. But otherwise, it was always there. But it just had lost its connection with the Krishna consciousness. That's the only thing. Lost its connection with the native culture, so it lost its balance. Things were there. You know, you see Mahabharata and Jarnabharata, that was, you know, some time ago. And they were human sacrifices. You know, Ramachandra, the Ravana underneath the earth. Mahiravana. Right? He was doing a sacrifice. 1,000 kings, I think. So that's been going on. You know, so that the, you know, at the time of the Romans and Greeks, they had gods and goddesses that they would sacrifice, you know, people to. No, it's nothing new. But it's out of proportion. You know what I'm saying? The other one had the rituals and approaching the guru and the shastra, that the whole idea was, is with time you decide to move to a higher form. I have to perform ritual, I have to make an offering, I have to worship a deity, I have to approach a guru. But now it's for a more, you know, it's moving more towards the Lord Buddhist instead of our heroes. And they move out. So these things are not new. So that's why it's also sometimes interesting to note how devotees will get so distracted by something that they think is modern, when it's so like random. Was into that, you know? It's like my grandmother was into that. So it's like my grandmother used to take me to conferences. Right? These are people in their suits and ties on what's now called spirulina. It was blue algae number something. It was being grown in Mexico, and it was a thing you could take it and you wouldn't have to eat anything else. So my grandmother used to take me to those things. My grandmother had a machine as big as this table that would make carrot juice. Right? You know, you had to put it in, grind up the carrot juice, make a pulp out of it, and then put it into these special bags, and you put it in the thing that would be pressed and pressed, and then you get your carrot juice, right? And then, you know, Grandma having handed me the carrot juice, what did she say to me? Chew it, don't swallow it. So you're going to tell me all this stuff is new? So that's the whole point. This is so old. You know, seances and this and that, tarot cards. We went to one, you know, one family friend went to one of their parties. And one of the side entertainers, close friends, was the medium. And these are people like, you know, middle age or even older, who are like, you know, they were on the city council. You have the mayor and you have city council. Like that. These are citizens who work for the city. Very established people. Like that. So, and husband and wife are both from the council and she's doing the reading the orders. It's just you know, so we just grew up with this stuff, you know, so now it's all something new and oh, what about this and what about that? It's like, what about that? So the point is it has its place, it has its use. Yes, you get more nutritional value out of something if you chew your liquids and drink your solids, you know, like that, you know. You know, eat your spinach, you know. Like, eat your vegetables, you know, kids are starving in India, right? Like, you see plenty of starving in India. That's a conspiracy. All the grandmas in America telling all the kids that people are dying in India. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is anything you disconnect from the Vedic culture is modern. It's always been there. It always will be. There will always be a modern. But at the same time, there will always be the Vedic. So the intelligent, because it's the same knowledge, but one, because it doesn't have its connection, it's not complete. So you don't get a problem necessarily at all with a consistent result. So the choice is do you take the knowledge in its original form that you get your best benefit from, or do you take it in a disconnected form that you may or may not get a good result in? Right? The one will get you out of the material world, take you back to Godhead and answer all your questions. The other one may work, may answer a few questions for some time, but then sometimes doesn't work, and then sometimes leave you even more questions than you started with. So that's the choice. It's not about, you know, oh, there's this whole body of knowledge called modern, and there's Vedic. No, there's only Vedic knowledge. But that knowledge of the Vedas has been disconnected. That's called modern. That's the choice. Modern New Age is just—it's all just whatever you take. New Age is a little closer because it has more of the elements and trappings of the Vedic culture. So sometimes modern can be pretty weird, but the point is it doesn't. That's the point, is that if it's connected to Krishna, then it works. But it's its connection to Krishna that makes it valuable, not the thing itself. Right? I read my horoscope and it helped me so much to understand who I am, and now I can better do my service. Great! It's because now you can do service for Krishna, especially. You just read it and you supposedly know who you are and you go on your Monday life. Who be? Right? I mean, there's people who know who they are without having horoscope done. So, if it works, fine, great. But don't take it out of balance. Don't now say everyone's got to get their chart done. You know? Because it's not good. Because if you don't know what you're dealing with, it also may be bad.